Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Facebook turns 10, and we're going to do a little looking back. Plus, Pinterest says you can't pay other people to pin things for you, and what's up with this secret app? And is it going to make us all monsters? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 148, recorded Thursday, February 6th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Lynda.com. To learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/social hour. That's lynda.com/social hour. And by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 270,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/social hour to receive a free Power Pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello, everybody. Happy Thursday. For those of you watching live, it is 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, and this is another fun-filled episode of The Social Hour. I am Sarah Lane in Petaluma, California.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. I'm in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. It's nice to chat with you again, Sarah. The weeks just fly by. It seems like every time I turn around, we're ready to do the show again.
I know. It's funny, too. We were the engineers, Burke and John, before the show, everyone's saying, is it Friday? No, it's used to be Friday for The Social Hour, but it's Thursday, which is a great day to talk social. But it can screw with you when you think, ooh, Friday. No.
I know.
Not Friday yet.
We did the show for such a long time on Fridays, but I am a big fan of doing it on Thursday. Definitely feels as though the stories are more fresh, and I think we're more fresh, Sarah.
I think so, too. Not that there's anything wrong with Friday, but I think Thursday is just a better day for both you and me. Well, let's get right into some of our top stories of the week. Anybody who's been on Facebook in the last, 72 hours is very familiar with Facebook's look back videos, which is a video that Facebook will put together for you to help you celebrate. Well, it's Facebook's 10th anniversary. Many of us haven't actually been active on Facebook for 10 years because, of course, it started as a college network. I don't think I joined Facebook until 2007, perhaps even 2008. Amber, I don't know about you.
I want to say 2006 or 2007, somewhere in that time frame. I do have my look back video, of course. I could just check that to see when I actually joined. But yeah, I think it was around that time frame.
It's kind of cool. I guess the thing that's okay, I have a couple issues with this, Amber, and I'm just going to get right out there and say them. The first one is that it's really only interesting to you. Everybody that I know, well, okay, let's say 50% of the people that are in my newsfeed have all posted their look back videos. And I think it's nostalgia for the person whose video it is, but not really anybody else. I mean, maybe if I showed up in a lot of your look back video, Amber, I might be like, oh, cool. That was, you know, some of Amber's biggest moments or moments with me. But for the most part, I find it's kind of turned into like a spammy thing. Everyone's saying, oh, check out my look back video. And it's like, nah, I already looked at my own. I don't really care what yours looks like.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where we're over it now, Sarah.
You know,
maybe. It feels like 24 hours of this, and this is all that you see in your news feed. It seems to be somewhat overdone. However, I do know there are people out there who absolutely love this. I particularly think of some parents who I know on Facebook who think it's just neat that they can see all of these pictures so well. I think for those of us who are familiar with services like Animoto, which I would argue do an even better job of compiling photos together and setting them to music, it just seems to me like I wasn't overly impressed with this. I mean, it's a 1 minute video, but there's lots of software out there that will let you do this. So I don't know, but obviously they made a dent as far as people having conversations around this, because like you said, 50% of people I know as well are using this a lot.
Yeah, it's very cute. I do understand, and as you mentioned, there are other services that do stuff like this. you and I have heard of them or maybe even tried them out. I guess most people haven't. And they're not going to edit together some sort of like a Ken Burns effect type photo collage. So it's sort of adorable. And yes, it's Facebook's way of getting us to promote Facebook because we all want you to watch our videos. Here's my second issue with this, Amber. And this is something that's, I don't know, it's unique to me, but maybe some other people understand the feeling. My look back includes people that, you know, like ex-boyfriends and that sort of thing, where it's like, as soon as I started looking at mine, I was like, yep. This is why I can't use a lot of other social services like TimeHop, which is designed to like remind you what you were doing on social media a year ago or 2 years ago. Or even Path, really, for that matter. Mm-hmm. That's one of those things. It's like, that's where Facebook isn't in the wrong. You know, there might be a picture that I took with somebody and it got a lot of comments, and that's one of the highlights of my time on Facebook. But it's an issue with social media in general because you get connected to people where in real life, sometimes our connections change or don't last.
Yeah, you're exactly right, which is, I think, is one of the reasons that Facebook just recently announced, and they had this on TechCrunch, that Facebook is going to allow you to edit your look back videos pretty soon. They don't have details as far as the specific date, but it seems like a lot of people either loved their look back videos or they hated them. So Facebook is rolling out that feature where you can go in and you can edit them. So I think there are a lot of people who will appreciate this because, you know, like you said, a lot has changed for a lot of people since they first signed up on Facebook. You don't necessarily want all of that in your look back video. So you can check out the support page on Facebook, and they talk about having that feature and rolling it out fairly soon.
So speaking of look back videos, I did see a report, and we've got it here in our rundown, that there was a situation where a father whose son had passed away really wanted to see his son's look back video. And of course, because of, you know, privacy issues, Facebook was not responding to his request because this wasn't actually his account. But it sounds like they've changed their tune.
Yeah, they have changed their tune. And the dad created a video to try to get Facebook to pay some attention to this. The video eventually went viral, got about 700,000 views. I know the dad also tweeted out to Mark Zuckerberg and emailed Facebook, got no answer. And the good news is Facebook did come around and say that, you know what, we're going to do something for you. We're going to allow you to do this. And you're not the only one. There are quite a few people that have family members who have perhaps passed away in the past few years, and they also want to be able to create these look back videos. So it seems like Facebook is doing something to help these people. And this particular dad, I'm sure, will be very happy.
I think so. I mean, it's an exceptional case. But it is something that is not only the right thing to do for Facebook, but it also allows the company to say, yeah, we listen to you. We there are situations where we can make exceptions, and we do, you know, listen to the public. This is not really related, but there's somebody that I used to work with who passed away recently, and I didn't even really know until after the fact because we weren't really close anymore. And he, for whatever reason, there are so many privacy settings where you can allow anybody to post on your Facebook profile. You can allow just friends. You can allow just certain friends. And he seems to have sort of let anybody who wants to post on his Facebook page. And there has been such an outpouring of old colleagues and friends and people that he knew a long time ago who have kept his Facebook page, this is quite recently, alive, and there are all these photos, and it's like this living, breathing, really positive place. And it's the sort of thing where I went and looked at his profile thinking, oh, this is going to be really sad. And it actually isn't at all. It's like a shrine to him, and it's one of the nicest feelings I've ever had on Facebook. I don't think I've ever felt so sort of warm fuzzy about humanity as I had when I saw this Facebook profile of his. I don't know how long it continues. I'm not exactly really sure how those rules work out, but it was nice.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, at the bottom of this USA Today article, they also mentioned that Facebook has come out to say that they're going to look into better ways for people to be able to memorialize people that they've lost. And so they recognize that there probably are a lot of people like you, Sarah, who would go to a page and really have it as a place where you can remember someone. And it seems based on this article that they're going to be rolling out some new features to allow people to do this in an even more significant way. So I think that's a need that Facebook has had for a long time. I mean, they're 10 years old now, right? So a lot happens in people's lives over the course of a decade. And I think they'll have a lot of people who will really appreciate this new feature.
Love it or hate it, the fact that Facebook is 10 years old really does say something. The network has changed a lot. Anybody who had a college account back in the day, which I knew about the Facebook back in the early days. I was working down in LA at the time, but it was like something for kids in college. And I was not in college anymore. And so for a while, as many others did, I kind of tossed it aside, like, well, it's just not a tool for me. I'm a little beyond that. And as it's grown and become very ubiquitous with the idea of social networking, you got to give props. That is no small feat to stay around in this world, not only for 10 years, but to get over a billion users in that time.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And also think about the demographics they've been able to attract to Facebook, right? You know, you have 13-year-olds, you have 83-year-olds who love Facebook and depend on it to stay in touch with family and friends. So I think you're totally right from that perspective, that it is a huge success story, because I don't think we've seen any social network in our time that has really been able to attract such a wide audience. And most of them just don't last that long. And I think we're going to see that more and more in the future, that maybe they have a lifespan of just a couple of years, but to make it to 10 is a pretty big deal.
It really is. Well, a company that is not quite 10 years old, but still hanging in there is Twitter. And apparently there was a debate about, how do I phrase this? About science versus faith that ended up sparking quite a debate on Twitter.
Yeah, it was interesting. It just took place a couple of nights ago, and I first found out about it because I saw so many people using the creation debate hashtag talking about Bill Nye the Science Guy, who I absolutely love, and it was fun to dive into the conversation that people were having in this debate. But I think even more interesting, Sarah, was the fact that when I was watching this and I was watching the conversation unfold on Twitter, I really started to think, you know what? People talk all the time about the future of television, and to me, this felt like this is it, you know, a debate with two interesting people. It's live online. I saw as many as 3 million people had been involved in watching the video. I know it had, in the hundreds of thousands of views as far as people watching live. So it was a real success in terms of demonstrating that people would watch online television and participate in such a significant way through Twitter, and also memes that were created too. I don't know if you've seen any of them. I mean, there were animated GIFs, there were funny tweets, and it really kind of ran the gamut.
I know there are definitely friends of mine who are heavily in the science community and very vocal about that, who were not necessarily even on one side or the other. They were just welcoming the fact that this was such, not just a lively debate, but something that really matters to people for the most part. You might be somewhere in the middle, but this tends to be one of those subjects where somebody feels extremely strongly one way or the other. And, you know, I don't want to speak for the science community as a whole, but I know that for many people who are not only active in science, but are hoping to get kids more involved in science, say that the mere discussion, having a debate, asking these questions is good for science as a whole, because it gets us talking about what the possibilities are and having not just opinions, but being able to critically back up those opinions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's not as though it was a short debate. It was a 2.5-hour debate that ran live on YouTube. So pretty significant length as far as getting people to really tune in and want to be able to watch for that long. So a big success. And I think we're going to see a lot more of this in 2014 with YouTube really being the place where people want to do live television like this and have conversations or content that isn't going to be able to easily exist in traditional television, because I'm not sure that they would have been able to capture even that many viewers if they were on some type of network television station.
Well, speaking of Twitter, but not just Twitter, places that make people celebrities with likes or followers or views. All of that stuff ends up being a possibly business where you could game the system. And there's an article that you found, Amber, at bizjournals.com that lays out a little bit more information about how selling likes or followers or really social media clicks is actually a big business.
It is a big business. Based on this article, there's one stat that they talk about in the middle of the article saying that according to a pair of researchers and bloggers in Italy, fake Twitter followers can bring in more than $40 million a year. Fake Facebook likes can bring in more than $200 million a year. I knew that this was big business, but I didn't think it was this big. And we've talked about buying Twitter followers before. I think more and more people are aware that there are organizations and individuals who are buying fake Facebook likes. The same thing is happening with YouTube in terms of buying views. And YouTube just this week announced that they're trying to clamp down on that as well. So it's an ongoing problem that many of these big networks have, is people are trying to game the system on a regular basis. And as much as the networks try to control it, many times there are people in the technology space who just get savvy and savvier and figure out a way to continue to game. And obviously, with numbers like this, it is a huge problem. But there's also a big demand for being able to buy your way into this world.
Yeah, and it's interesting, even though we know, I know for a fact that, let's just say on Twitter, there's some sort of a subset of those followers that aren't real or don't provide any value to me or anything like that. At the same time, we're conditioned to believe that more is better. And I will admit, sometimes I'll look at someone's profile sort of like, is this guy somebody worth paying attention to? You know, he wants to maybe engage in conversation with me. And you see a high follower count, and I have to remind myself, hold on, let's do a little bit more research, because if he has over 100,000 followers, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. It should mean something, but it doesn't, because again, if you're smart and savvy enough about how social media works, it's a little bit of a smoke and mirrors type of a project, and being able to read the tea leaves is a whole other skill. That goes for Facebook as well. I actually, Amber, wasn't aware, even though I understand that there's a lot of spam on Facebook, I wasn't aware that there was so much of a gaming of Facebook likes, but apparently it's alive and well, just as it would be anywhere else.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I've been familiar with this in terms of Twitter, but like you didn't suspect that it was such a big problem on Facebook. I also think on YouTube, you know, it's a big problem there, but I wasn't as aware of that as well. And I think those places are even more difficult to figure out if those are real, authentic likes or views. Whereas on Twitter, I think you can see from a person's engagement, you get a sense of, oh, is this real or not? How many people do they follow? How much do they interact? But as far as views and likes, it seems like a more difficult game in terms of figuring out if those are fake, in fact. So I don't know. I think we're going to see a lot more of this. And in fact, the next article we have in the rundown is about people who are paying people to pin items and share content on Pinterest. So Pinterest is also a place where this is happening too.
So as I understand it, Pinterest basically says you can't do that. You can't outsource your Pinterest identity. Is that correct?
I think, or companies can't pay people to pin stuff for them. I think that's part of the policy change as well, as far as I understand it. And the weird thing here, though, is they've just basically changed the language in the acceptable use policy. They just did this last week. So according to this article on Mashable, they are really condemning users who pay others to follow them or repin their images. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can't buy new followers or shares. So I didn't think this was an issue, but apparently even on Pinterest, people aren't necessarily playing nice either.
Well, yeah, because the whole idea is that it's supposed to be authentic. And on one hand, you might be like, well, if I'm a business and I'm selling a pillow, and yeah, I'm paying people to like pretend like they love this pillow in the hopes of making more sales, that's, you think, of course, Pinterest doesn't want that sort of thing, because then it turns into a, who do you trust? Can you believe that a pin is really a pin? But if you're an individual who's like, well, this is part of my personal brand, let me pay somebody to keep some sort of a Pinterest identity alive for me, a little bit more of a gray area, and maybe Pinterest is really not trying to enforce this because of the latter. It's more about businesses using Pinterest as just a place to advertise without paying Pinterest. And so I can see where that's going. But in general, how do you enforce it? you probably, you know, it's like a whack-a-mole type of a thing. You can find out that there's some shady activity and delete or ban accounts one by one, but it seems hard to enforce.
No, I think it must be really hard to enforce. But the interesting thing, too, is that the language on in Pinterest is particularly interesting because what they say is that they won't allow a brand to pay an individual to pin an item. However, a brand can pay an individual to create a board on its behalf, and then the user could receive commission. So at the bottom of the Mashable article, they go into more details around when you can get paid for sharing and posting on Pinterest. So it seems like there are different rules depending on what you want to do. So it gets a little bit tricky. I'm sure it's confusing a lot of Pinterest users right now.
And really, Pinterest and YouTube and Twitter and one of the bigger questions is, okay, well, it obviously is in the company's best interest, all of these companies, to get rid of all the junk, all the bloat, all the spam, all of the nefarious money under the table type of stuff, and have a clean experience as possible. But these are all companies that depend on advertising to make money. Some of this advertising is still being worked out. But, you know, in the case of Pinterest, Pinterest wants advertisers to take Pinterest seriously. And especially when you're such a new company like Pinterest that's had such crazy growth over the last couple of years, but didn't exist. It certainly didn't exist when we were all getting used to Twitter. When there's enough of a sort of factoring in that, like, 10% of the stuff is all junk anyway, well, that makes advertisers confused, and that makes advertisers want to go somewhere else where there's more of a proven model. And I think that all of these social networks kind of have that same issue of you want everything, you want a number to really mean a number. You don't want it to be thought of as maybe just some inflated nothing. But that affects advertising, which then affects the company if for some reason they have figured out how to get rid of all the bad guys.
Yeah, I know.
Because the numbers then seem smaller.
I know. You know, I don't think it's an easy task for them to have to try to figure this out, especially if you have so many people trying to game it so often. So it's a difficult place to be in some ways. We always rave about all of these analytics that we have for all these different social networks, but when they're so easily swayed, it just makes you not believe at the end of the day that they are, like you say, even legitimate at all. So it changes the game entirely. But that's why we're here, Sarah, because we can help people figure this out.
That's exactly right. We do our best. We learn as you learn, and we all are a little bit better for it. Speaking of getting better, we should take a moment to thank Lynda.com for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. It's a great way to get better at all sorts of stuff. If you're interested in, you want to learn a new program, you want to learn a new skill, you want to have, there might be tools that are available to you and you just don't know how to use them, how about some video tutorials at Lynda.com? That's Lynda.com. These are easy to follow video tutorials where you can learn at your own pace, on your own terms, from experts, from people who really know what they're talking about in a variety of categories. With a Lynda.com subscription, you as a member receive unlimited access to thousands, not hundreds, but thousands of these online video courses, and they cover all sorts of stuff, software, creative, business skills. In fact, we actually got a really nice email from Janita, who said she had heard about Lynda.com from The Social Hour, and she said she wanted to put together more of a social media presence for business purposes. She said she subscribed to Lynda, and she ended up watching the tutorials up and running with Pinterest, up and running with Facebook, Facebook for Business, sharing photos on Instagram, and then said that she even was delving into some of the content strategy and marketing courses. So what a perfect way to, again, get up and running in a variety of places that you might think, you know, I want this to be part of my next job. I want this to help me grow my career. And I can do this with Lynda. You can improve your skills, learn new software, keep up with technology. Some new courses, too. See if any of these strike your fancy. Google Analytics tips, Google AdWords essential training, WebMotion for beginners. I would love that. Becoming a triple threat project manager. Sounds good to me. Yeah, over 2,000 courses and stuff's getting added daily. So you can always find a new course for you at Lynda.com. Curated course content as well. Each lynda.com course is structured so you as a user can learn from start to finish. Again, you work on your own schedule, but you can watch from your desktop, your tablet, your mobile device. You can start when you're commuting on the train and pick up at home when you've got time after you make dinner. It's all very, very convenient because it's all on demand. And that's how you learn at your own pace, on your own schedule, and you don't really feel this fake pressure to get through a class all in one fell swoop. So if you'd like to learn something new in 2014 with lynda.com, it's only $25 a month for access to the whole library. $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan that gives you some extra goodies. You can follow along with the instructor's project with exercise files, using the same assets as your instructor. Just kind of feel like you've got even more of that sort of back catalog of what you'll be learning. A free 7-day trial, though, is our gift to you. Visit lynda.com/social hour. And that's the whole library. That's not a tiny little piece of the library. That's the whole library. Over 2,000 courses, free for 7 days. Take advantage of it. Learn some new stuff for free. We've also created a playlist with some suggested courses to get you started if you're like, this sounds fun, but I don't know what I want. lynda.com/social hour. And thanks to Lynda, as always, for sponsoring our show. All right, Amber, we've got an app of the week, and I feel like I'm an app queen, but I've never heard of this.
Okay, this is a pretty new app, and one of the reasons I thought it would be a good fit is that Valentine's Day is coming up, and I'm sure there are a lot of listeners and viewers who need to send flowers on Valentine's Day. The app is called Pro Flowers, and it's available for the iPhone. There was just a review on TechCrunch, and it talked about how well-designed the app is. There are other apps there, as you probably know, to allow you to order flowers, but they're a little clunky, and the design isn't that great. This is a really beautiful app. It makes it super simple. You can store all your information and then get flowers that can be delivered up to the next, or as early as the next day. So really handy if you have someone to buy for next Friday. It's a little bit of a hint, Sarah. And you want to give it a try out. It looks pretty cool.
Well, I can't say that Valentine's Day is my favorite holiday, but I do think that this is adorable. Simple gifting app. It's the thought that counts, right? So make it as convenient on yourself or your loved one as possible. And yes, that sort of like little hint aspect of it is probably a good thing to avoid some tears later on February 14th.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? It doesn't have to just be about Valentine's Day. All year round, I'm sure there are people who you could send flowers to or plants. So it's just handy to have this on your phone. I recently sent flowers, I think it was at Christmas time, to my grandmother. And for some reason, I remember it being a cumbersome process. I was calling the florist and I don't know. It just wasn't that easy. But if I could go into an app and look at all the pretty pictures and order from there, I think it would have been a much better process for me.
I love this. Because flowers are... I don't know, maybe you're allergic to flowers, but for the most part, I'm going to say it's universally a really great thing to get from somebody, right? Everybody loves flowers. I moved recently and a friend brought me over a little bouquet of flowers and I was like, it just cheered up the whole place. So
nice.
Yes, Pro Flowers, make it easy on yourself. And in fact, I was just having this issue the other day, Amber, because I was, you know, holding my phone and thinking, there's got to be some solution. A friend of mine, I was going to send her flowers just sort of as a thank you. There's got to be a way that I can do this really easily. And I thought, do I have a TaskRabbit? Like, go get flowers? And then, you know, I knew I was not thinking of the most obvious solution. So something like Pro Flowers, if I have that on my phone, I never have to think about it again.
All right. Well, now for our social tip, something you may have to think about is if you have children at home or maybe you're having a child, what do you do about usernames on certain social media sites in terms of the child's name? Now, this article that I posted in the rundown, this is more about how to manage social media and kids. But one of the experts within the article, she mentioned something that I haven't heard a lot of people do, which is to actually go and reserve usernames on social media sites if you have a child, to reserve it in their name. And maybe you even want to buy a URL, for instance. Maybe, for example, you want to keep that as kind of a gift to your child so that they can have their URL online and their Twitter name, if Twitter's still going to be around when they get old enough to use it, or even the same thing on Facebook.
How
neat idea.
How early do you feel is appropriate for this sort of thing? I mean, I kind of liken it to people who, like, get on preschool wait lists before they've even had the baby. This happens in certain cities. You might think that's the craziest thing you've ever heard of, but it really does in certain cities. But I mean, if you've got, like, if you know for a fact that if and when you have a child, it will, your son or daughter will definitely have this name, is it okay then to reserve a username, or do you have to already be a parent?
I think you can do it pretty early. I think when we had Connor, I believe that we did buy a domain name for him literally before he was born. I know that may seem a little intense. I think we did the same thing with Twitter, although I have to tell you that I do not remember his username and password for that. But it was just this idea of allowing them to kind of protect their image online and make sure that they had that space whenever they wanted to use it. Obviously, with Facebook, I mean, they have to be 13 to use Facebook officially. Mm-hmm. But I could see perhaps maybe Facebook will be around for another decade, and it may be something where your child wants to have their name. It's an interesting way to think about the reputation online of a child, and how much responsibility do you have to make sure that you protect that reputation. So I don't know if it's for everyone, but I have a feeling there are listeners of the show who may think, not a bad idea.
Yeah, I think a username, really, I mean, it used to be, well, if you've got a name, you make sure that you buy your own domain before somebody else with your name does that. So I've got sarahlane.com, and it really is, it's funny. It's too bad that Squarespace isn't a sponsor this week, because I had a great experience with Squarespace support recently, because I was changing the design of my domain, and I got through some DNS issues with their help. But it's one of those things where I've got my domain. It's live. There's stuff there, but it is sort of, it has decreased in its relevance to me, because I don't think people so much are going to some sort of a landing page for me. It's like they're trying to figure out where I might be on social networks. And so by the time a lot of people who are in their 20s and 30s now are having children, the username might be the place. Maybe people won't care about vanity URLs anymore.
Who knows, right? So I guess you can grab them up. Although I guess with Twitter, you can only grab up so many names if they're inactive for a certain amount of time. I know Twitter can take back those usernames, so that's something to think about. I think the individual in the article that I found, they were actually posting on their child's behalf. You know, I don't think pretending to be their child, but posting stuff that may be of interest to family members, and then said they would pass on the account when their child was the right age. So hopefully they weren't posting anything embarrassing, because that would be even more horrific.
I do have some friends who, it's sort of a tongue-in-cheek type of a thing, but they've obviously got children who aren't old enough to know how to type or really even talk, and they have active Twitter accounts, and it's like, I don't think anybody's confused as to what's going on, but you figure, yeah, well, that's, now they've got the name, and at some point, my friend's daughter, who's 2, you know, maybe when she's of age, she can decide to delete all the stuff that mom and dad did, or maybe explain to all the people out there that now it's really her. And it's always a little odd when there's a Twitter account. I know that a lot of companies do this, and this is, it's acceptable practice to have more than one manager of a social media account for a business or a brand. But, you know, like Barack Obama is a good example. President Barack Obama, obviously president of the U.S., I just felt like I needed to say that. He doesn't always post on his official Twitter account, but you know it's him because there'll be a little B-O, which are his initials at the end, just to make sure that you kind of know when it's like a special, oh, the president actually tweeted this time. And that's always a little weird to me. It's like, can't we figure out how to make sure that the person who's represented by this Twitter account is actually just that person? I don't really want to have to think about it.
Although in saying that, I know BlackBerry, for example, they have an account on Twitter. I think it's at BlackBerry Helps. Mm-hmm. And I do like what they do, because they have all of their customer service people, or at least they did at one point, they have their photos listed on the right-hand side of the screen, and then they have the initials that those people are tweeting as. So that becomes interesting from a customer service standpoint if you want to personalize the experience somewhat. I don't mind that so much, but I think you're right. When you're an individual, you would expect that the individual is tweeting. But for companies, I think there are interesting ways you can use, just sign off with a quick little, you know, two letters and that's it.
Yeah. This actually reminds me now, just because we're talking about brands on Twitter, I had an issue with my Sonos music audio system, because I moved recently, and I don't know, if I couldn't recreate anything. There was part, one of my speakers wasn't working, and I was out of ideas. And on the Sonos website, they suggest, you know, calling between certain hours of the day. I think this was on a Sunday. Nobody was going to pick up the phone, and they said, or I think it was Sonos Support was the Twitter account. It was like, just tweet us at Sonos Support. And I thought, well, I kind of like to get this resolved. Let's just give it a go. And I thought that was kind of interesting because, especially when it comes to technical support problems, and a lot of companies do this, they want to be available to you through other means. Yeah, Sonos Support Team. There you go. And I thought, all right, well, I'll do my best to try to explain my issue, but it's a lot more than 140 characters. So it was one of these things where it's like, I appreciate the fact that they are available to me. And they did tweet back to me and they were trying to help. But I ended up actually having to get somebody on the phone later because my problem was, it wasn't going to be easily resolved with back and forth tweets. And I didn't really want to follow Sonos Support to take it to DM because I didn't really feel the need to follow the account. So it's sort of a weird thing where companies are trying to figure out how to be present and helpful to their customers on specifically a network like Twitter, but really social media in general.
I think it's a little bit of a clunky experience right now, but I know TELUS in Canada, for example, they're one of the big telcos. I just complained to them recently about something and they suggested I follow them back. And then I had to go to a form where I had to authorize them as far as putting my complaint into kind of a longer message. So they had this kind of intermediary process between just sending them a DM message where I went and authorized them to help me out and gave them my official account number. So it was like this website in the middle of that process. And I could see that being something in customer service that would be more helpful. You take it, you know, offline from the DM into, you know, a third party app that could just simply be like a live chat, right? That makes more sense to me than just sending Twitter messages.
Yeah, I think so too.
You can invent that, Sarah. We're looking to get rich, right?
Oh, yeah. I would love to get rich. Let's do that. Yeah. A support area that's based on social media, but is not constrained by social media.
Like a little Twitter app that lives behind, you know, so you go into the next level of customer support. There's probably is something.
Well, all right. Let's, now that we're talking about social media, and I have to be really careful with this one because I don't want to accidentally show anything I'm not supposed to show, but Amber, a couple days ago on i5, actually it was yesterday, when i5 came out, I talked about an app called Secret, which is similar to an app called Whisper, which is about anonymously confessing stuff or saying things that you wouldn't say with your own username on something like Twitter. It's the idea is to feel free enough to be able to have more self-expression. Now, what's interesting about Secret and the reason I thought we should talk about it today is it's not just anonymously posting your deepest, darkest secrets, but what it does is it connects to your phone because you have to tell the app your phone number, and it also will validate your email address so that it connects to your contact list. So it will say if somebody posts something, there are no names, just little avatars, so you can tell sort of who the original poster is and anybody who comments on anything. But you can tell, like this here is somebody who lives in Kansas. Well, off the top of my head, I don't know anybody who lives in Kansas, but that's a friend of a friend of mine because it's pulling from my contact list. Now, your contact list might be like just friends and family. So Secret might be like, you could almost figure out who that was pretty easily. I have a crazy contact list. I mean, this is like people that I might have responded to on Gmail once a long time ago. So my contact list is not necessarily that tight-knit a group of friends. But, all right, so this is a little something here that somebody posted. A friend is somebody that knows your secrets and still loves you. I'm really trying to stay away from the scandalous stuff, by the way, because I don't feel that would be fair to show some of this stuff, but you can imagine that some of it does get pretty juicy. Now, this is more of just a little bit, it's almost like an inspirational message, right? This is coming from California. Now, if it was somebody that was a direct friend of mine, it would say friend here. And there's one comment. So you can say, oh, somebody wrote, I love you. Okay, that's fine. public comments are disabled, by the way, and that's an original poster's prerogative. And it got 86 likes. So this is the sort of thing where, well, maybe you don't have anything to say about that, but you think, that's a nice message. Now, I don't know who would write that and feel uncomfortable attributing it to themselves, because it's not really all that scandalous. But they do get scandalous, Amber, and it's weird because, for example, this morning, the post ended up getting deleted. I don't know how long it was live, but there was something about somebody that I know specifically, and it wasn't nice. And then it becomes like a, ooh, is this like a burn book type of a thing? That we've seen so many of these issues with networks like Formspring, and there was the other Ask.fm,
mm-hmm.
which you know ends up sometimes becoming a vehicle for bullying, or at the very least, really hurt feelings. And you think, gosh, social networking really shouldn't be about that. But at the same time, this sort of freedom to be anonymous doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be mean and awful. So what do you think about a service like this?
If the audio listeners could see my face, I have sort of contorted my mouth because I think it just seems like it would be ripe for any type of bullying, you know, not just with kids, but with adults. And I also think, wow, you know, there are so many places online that you can go to already post anonymously. Do we really need an app? And I'm not sure really, Sarah, if I would use that. But are you kind of drawn into the messages because you know that it's someone in your network? Is that what you're saying is the appealing part?
It's yeah, not that is
really
exactly
that anonymous.
It. There was, I had actually just sort of, I was sort of tinkering in there just to see. I posted something yesterday that was, it was enough about me that I knew if a couple of my friends were paying attention, they'd be like, that was you, right? That you're the one who said the thing about eating Indian food late at night. And sure enough, within just a few minutes, one of my friends pinged me and said, did you write that? And I said, yeah, I did. I just wanted to see if you were going to say anything about it. And you did. It's exact, you know, it's not really meant to be, hey, let me say something because I really want you to figure out who I am. But people are clearly using it that way. It's weird. It's like it's an animal I suspect that this whole thing will not end well because there's going to be some bad incident and it's going to sour the experience for everybody and they're going to think of it as a place to say terrible things about folks. Now, this isn't necessarily some sort of slander against anybody, but this one says, this is from a friend, I work at Tumblr and we're about to be acquired. Well, that's silly. I mean, Yahoo bought Tumblr, so I don't know if that's supposed to be a joke. I don't know if that's supposed to be, I mean, this is obviously supposed to be a joke, but that sort of thing, you start seeing these like weird little tips. And again, this is probably just because a lot of the company I keep works in the tech journalism industry. So those sorts of anonymous tips would be kind of juicy, but you have no way of knowing who's saying anything, if there's any fact behind it. I think for like personal reflection, that's one thing. But to further some sort of a baseless rumor, there's a lot of potential for that. And that doesn't help anybody either.
I can just think of what Steve Jobs might have thought of an app like this, you know, considering it's running on the iPhone and they're very secretive about the way that they do business sometimes. It seems ripe for individuals and companies to reveal secrets from their companies as well. So I think you're right. It seems like there could be a lot of scandal involved in this app, Sarah.
Yeah, very much so. And in fact, it's, I will say it's very addictive. There's something very compelling about it because, again, there's that air of, ooh, wait, do I know who just posted that? That seems like an opinion of somebody that I know. But anonymity, and there are people who talk about the fact that there really should be no anonymity in comments. It makes conversations derail. It makes people say terrible things. It contributes to the idea of bullying, that something like this is just a bad idea all around. I don't think it's a badly executed app. I think it's actually, it's pretty fun. But again, at the end of the day, you kind of have to say, what kind of person do I want to be on social media? Am I really contributing anything when I'm getting excited about like rumors and discussions about, you know, personal attacks against people or even companies?
Yeah, it's not pretty.
I know, it's not pretty. Well, you know what is pretty? The idea that you can read books without actually having to strain your eyes, or while you're commuting, or while you're doing something else, with Audible.com. Yes, Audible is an often sponsor of The Social Hour, and we love Audible, because all we have to do, really, I mean, it does our work for us. We just have to explain how fun the service is. Audible.com is the leading provider by a long shot of audiobooks. It has over 150,000, yes, you heard that right, downloadable titles, all types of books. We got literature and fiction and nonfiction. And it's neat because you've got these books that are read to you. You, of course, can be, you know, you could be on a run, you know, holding your smartphone or listening at your computer, on your tablet. Audible is nice that way, where you can pick up where you left off. You know, we can't all necessarily read a book all in one sitting. But it's nice because it will tell you, oh, if you're going to read this particular book, this is how many hours you need to devote to that book. It can be great on a long flight. You can actually use a book to sort of close your eyes and let your imagination run wild and have the book read to you audibly. Amber, you had a kind of cool pick this week, a book called Contagious, Why Things Catch On. What is that book about?
Yeah, you know, I'm speaking at a conference in a few days, and the author of this book is also speaking there. So I thought it would be a perfect read. I need to buy this book, but maybe I should just listen to it on Audible. And it's all about why online content goes viral. It talks also about word of mouth. So I know people who listen to the show who are into the social media space. It seems like this would be the perfect thing to listen to on Audible. It's almost 7 hours long, which is pretty lengthy. But the interesting thing is the author, Jonah, he is a professor. And so a lot of the research that he's done has gone into this book, and they talk about that research as well. So really a great listen for anyone out there in the social media marketing world.
Absolutely love it. And it's a fascinating topic because sometimes it's inexplicable, right? Things catch on,
yeah.
That's sort of the fascinating part about going viral is it doesn't always make sense. There's not a proven formula. And Jonah Berger obviously has hit on something that's really interesting to a lot of people. And it's perfect
for
us.
Yeah, he definitely has. You know, I just looked up one of his talks because, like I said, he will be speaking at the same conference. And he has a couple of talks on YouTube if you also want to check him out there, too.
Very cool. You know, also cool is that if you are a viewer or listener of The Social Hour, Audible will give you a free audiobook of your choice to try out their service. Maybe you're like, I've never got on the Audible train. Well, now's the time. You can pick a book, you can download it, and at the end of your trial, you get to keep that book. You don't have to, like, it's a downloadable book. So once it's yours, and you can listen to it as many times as you like. If you would like to download this audiobook for free, it's very easy to do so. audiblepodcast.com/socialhour is the URL to go to. You sign up for a free trial, you get your book. Very easy. Don't worry about being on the hook for anything. You can cancel at any time, but we think that you'll like it. So try and get your free book right now or after the show's over. audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. And we thank Audible for their support of our show. All right, Amber, we got an email. This one comes from Randy, and this was, he lives in San Jose, California, right in my neck of the woods. It says, on episode 141, so this is a few weeks ago, of The Social Hour, you mentioned not understanding how an app like the native stock app made the list of top apps. We were talking about top apps on iOS and how the stock app didn't really make a whole lot of sense to us.
Yeah, I remember that.
Randy says, considering all of the gainfully employed smartphone users who lost their traditional company-funded retirement packages in favor of employee-sponsored or company-matched 401k retirement packages, I use the stock app to track all of the stocks within my 401k account because, like many U.S.-based employees with employee-sponsored or company-matched retirement packages, the employee is responsible for managing that account. This almost always includes choosing which stocks or funds to invest in. As you know, the value of a stock can change by the second. So keeping your eye on your 401k stock choices with a smartphone stock app is pretty smart. I guess you have a really good point there, Randy. And maybe that just goes to show that I should be paying more attention to my own 401k plan.
No, that's a really good point. And that makes a lot of sense to me. That could exactly explain why some of the stock apps have risen so high and are, in fact, so popular. So thank you so much for that, Randy.
Absolutely. We also got a tweet. This one comes from The Gadget Priest. That is his Twitter handle, or her. I'm not gonna jump to any conclusions here. And Gadget Priest points us to an article that comes from SB Nation, and this has a lot to do with the controversy that's coming out from journalists who are currently at Sochi, where the Russian Winter Olympics are about to take place. I believe opening ceremonies, well, they officially start on Friday, but since it's Russia, I think it actually starts at least in my area tonight, Thursday night. But the idea is that there is a very high level of security. There are not only athletes, but journalists who are covering the games, who, because of some unrest in that region in general, are understandably a little bit worried about their own safety and getting around. And SB Nation quotes Dmitry Kozak, who's the deputy prime minister responsible for these Olympic preparations, who said, this was in response to the idea that some Western visitors are deliberately trying to sabotage Sochi's big debut out of bias against Russia. This is actually his reason for saying that he believes this is happening. Quote, we have surveillance video from the hotels that show people turning on the shower, directing the nozzle at the wall, and then leaving the room for the whole day. Now, on the surface, you might say, well, yeah, you shouldn't do that because then your room's going to flood and then you're going to blame the hotel and you're going to say that Sochi's a bad experience. But wait a second. That means, is there surveillance video in people's hotel rooms?
Oh, wow.
That's not okay. Apparently an aide pulled Mr. Kozak away before the reporter could follow up with some questions because that was a little bit of a, wait, hold on a second. What are you saying here? Now, again, this is just a lot of... This is a lot of hype. There's a lot of hype about the Olympic Games. There always is, and the particular city or group of cities that end up getting the Olympic Games are under intense scrutiny for the entirety of the Olympics. It always has been that way. But Sochi is a special case for a variety of reasons. Russia's got some issues right now. But that's the sort of thing that you certainly don't want to say out loud.
You definitely don't want to say that out loud. And, you know, it's been interesting. I was going to put it in the rundown because I keep seeing pictures from journalists who are posting photos of their hotel rooms, things that they're eating, toilets. I mean, it almost seems to have become just an ongoing joke as far as their accommodations and the things that they're experiencing while they're over there. It seems worse than anywhere I've ever seen as far as the Olympics. So this type of comment, thinking that there is surveillance equipment in the hotel rooms where people are being monitored, is not going to help the situation at all.
Tony Wang, actually, Tony Wang of Twit fame, while we were talking about this, just sent me a Twitter account that I was not familiar with, Sochi Problems, which has almost 87,000 followers on Twitter and apparently is keeping a record of all of the things going wrong with these Olympic Games. I guess some of those people are people living in bad conditions in hotels. I don't know if anyone's actually flooding their own hotel room, but I certainly hope that there is not a surveillance camera pointed at your shower while you're taking it, because that is just not cool.
Not cool. Not cool at all.
No, that's just, I don't know how to get around that one. So,
you
Amber,
can't,
this,
really.
this article came in kind of right as we were starting the show, and I thought, well, let's talk about it, because we haven't talked about clout in a long time, even though it's a company that was certainly built around the idea that if you have a lot of followers, or you have a lot of influence, or you get a lot of retweets, or you've got a huge Facebook community, then you have more clout. Obviously, clout is a term, but the company Clout with a K was something that was started, I don't know, we've been talking about this for a couple years now, but quickly became sort of this popularity contest, at least in a lot of people's eyes. And I know a lot of people shied away from the idea of getting a higher clout score because, again, there's all of the gaming of numbers that happens on social networks, and the fact that you have a high clout score as compared to someone else might not really mean anything. You know, we haven't talked about clout on this show in months, But I really don't hear about clout ever, Amber. I don't know if you do. It sounds it kind of didn't catch on. It sounds like clout is wanting to spin off a little bit more into a service so the original concept was supposedly not about the score, but helping people to become more effective in social media. You are some sort of a leader in your field type of a thing. But it sounds like they are pivoting a bit to a new kind of clout experience. There's a create section that acts like a news feed. You could even compare it to something like Feedly, which is an aggregate based on RSS. At the top of the page of your clout profile, it still tells you what you're influential in that's gathered through your connected networks. You can add your aspirational topics. That doesn't actually sound that crazy, but I guess the new purpose of the news feed is to not just keep you up on the news, but help you to inspire original content based on what category you fit into. Maybe it's technology, social media, the company that you work for, that sort of a thing. So recommended content for you reminds me, Amber, at least on the surface, of what LinkedIn has been doing lately, where depending on who your friend network is and your interests and where you've worked in the past and maybe some of your areas of expertise, you have a personalized news feed as well that has a lot more to do with your line of work and your career than just you, the, you know, individual who happens to like whatever you like outside of work.
I think one of the interesting things about this move with clout is that it is more also about creating content or sharing content that's been put out there. I think you're right. LinkedIn does that already. It recommends content that's specific to you or your industry. But I do think that clout is onto something. I'm not sure that they're the ones who are going to master this, but I do think there is a need for some type of service, almost like a dashboard that not only allows you to post to multiple social media sites, but also helps with the discovery process of finding content that's relevant to your community. And it seems like they're going to do some neat things in terms of helping you identify if people in your network have seen this content. They have these different categories like On the Rise, Crowd Pleaser, Hidden Gem, Hot Off the Press, so content that was recently published by a trusted source. And I think there might be a demand for something like this. Like I said, I'm not sure that clout is going to be the ones to really rise to the top, but I could see something like this being useful for people who are trying to find stuff to post, to figure out if it's working for them, if their community is growing. You know, it's difficult because there's just so much content out there.
Yeah, I will give clout a try. I certainly don't want I've got all these tweets coming in about the app secret, and I'm trying to pay too much attention to them while we're talking about clout.
Oh boy.
Yeah, this is the problem of having your phone next to you that's buzzing every 2 seconds. But yes, I never hated the idea of clout. I actually think it's kind of interesting. It's like, okay, well, let's put some sort of a value on what you offer to this online world. If you spend so much of your time trying to not just further your brand, but make actual real connections with people, it can feel good for clout to say, oh, you are an expert in this particular arena. But it never really went far enough, or maybe it went too far in the idea of quantifying people, which nobody really likes to feel that way, unless of course you have the highest number of anyone that you know. So yeah, I'll give clout another try, and we can maybe follow up next week and see how we both feel about the new direction.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a try too. I'm interested in this.
Good. Yes, clout with a K. We will be back. We will be back. We'd love hearing from all of you. We love when you send us ideas about content that you'd like us to cover, or you've got feedback about something that we've already covered. Of course, if you ever miss anything that we've talked about and think, by the way, that clout article that was written up in the Next Web has all sorts of kind of great screenshots that break down exactly what is different that we don't have time to talk about on this episode. But we certainly have the link in there, too. twit.tv/TSH is our website where you can not only follow up on everything we've talked about, but all of our videos and our subscribe links and everything is there. And if you want to contribute to the show in the future, there are many ways that you can get a hold of Amber and me. Of course, we're doing our best to monitor all of the tweets that come in, not just during the show, but during the week between shows. You can also email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail if you're feeling brave at 2626-SOCIAL. You don't have to feel brave. Just keep it to 30 seconds or less. You can record a video, upload it somewhere, send us the link. But the point is, we want you all to have a voice on the show because it is social, and that is what we're all about. All right, Amber, I really like the idea of what you've got going on for Rad or Fad, which we'll get to in just a second.
All right.
Because the word iPad is in there, but I'm not going to make any judgments. I will wait patiently. But while we do, let's thank 99 Designs. They are our third sponsor of this episode of The Social Hour. And 99 Designs is great because Amber and I often joke about our next big money-making project. Like, Amber and I want to be billionaires. We don't want to keep talking about the billionaires. We want to be the billionaires. So what are we going to do? Well, maybe our future is in an amazing app that's a lot better than Secret, the app. Well, I don't have any design skills. Amber does, but she's extremely busy. She's always at some sort of a speaking engagement. She has like a million jobs. Well, what do we do? What if we were to use 99 Designs to find the perfect graphic designer to build that app for us? We've already got the idea. We just need somebody to make it a reality and make it look awesome. Now, it doesn't have to be about apps, by the way. It could be any sort of design. It could be a t-shirt design or a business card design or something for your website or a banner ad or anything like that. But apps, they're pretty hot right now. What you do is you go to 99designs.com and you explain the design that you're looking for. At that point, designers from around the world, they've got designers all over the globe, will start submitting designs to you and then you can give them feedback. Within a week, you pick your favorite design and then you're the owner of that design, you're happy with it, and then you're on your way. So 99 Designs gives you all this variety that you can choose from. So you're bound to get really not just the best design, but sometimes if you see a design that you like, you say, well, I don't know, that seems great. But when you've got 10 designs to choose from, you go, oh, that number 7, that's really the design that I didn't even know I wanted. I didn't even know how to articulate, because these designers, they know what they're doing. Over 270,000 designers are at your fingertips. They really are worldwide. And they'll give you some great designs. You can boost your brand's visibility. You can drive more traffic. Good design, you can't emphasize enough how important that is. If you go to 99designs.com/socialhour, you get a little something for free. It's a power pack of services that's valued at $99. It gives you more designer time and attention. You get featured with 99 Designs in their marketplace, so more people see you and know about your quest for good design. You get more designs that way. So it's really something to take advantage of. 99 Designs, a $99 power pack of services, completely free. Do go there. And we do thank 99 Designs for the support of The Social Hour. All right, Amber, rad or fad? It's iPad related, so I'm already interested.
It is iPad related. This is an article I read on shinyshiny.tv, although it is a rumor that is taking place all over the internet. And it's a rumor about Apple coming out with a larger iPad, this time with a 12.9-inch screen. And the article kind of dives into why this would be interesting, talks about other competitors who do have tablets at this size. But I thought it would make for a very interesting topic on The Social Hour because, you know, I don't know. Is this a good thing? Is this rad or is this fad? I mean, giant tablets, do we really want them or need them?
So I've heard of this rumor as well, Amber, and I don't know how I feel about it. In fact, there are some schools of thought that the whole idea that the new iPad that's a full-size, not the mini, but that the new full-size iPad is called the iPad Air is sort of mirroring Apple's strategy with laptops. Like, there's the MacBook Pro, there's the MacBook Air. Maybe there is some room for something like an iPad Pro that is, I don't know, has more storage and is faster and has a better processor. And, you know, I don't know how you can make the screen look much better than the Retina display. But the idea that it's bigger is where I feel like this just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And maybe I'm not thinking outside the box enough, because I have already heard from people saying, well, for my line of work, you know, we're holding iPads and we're maybe showing off presentations to prospective clients, you actually just want a bigger screen. But mm-hmm. that doesn't seem like the sort of thing that Apple would put so much research and development into, if it's just particular industries that get a lot out of this. If it was the educational sector, if schools were like, yes, we're not buying iPads because they're not big enough for students, that would be one thing. But I don't know that that's the case.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think it would be interesting maybe if they had a kickstand or something attached to it, so it almost became like a second screen or TV, I should say, in many ways. But otherwise, I think it would just be too large. I'm not sure they really need to make it any bigger. But I don't know. I think it's a bit of a fad because some tablet makers have gone this direction. And I think the current size of the iPad is actually just fine how it is today. So I don't think I would necessarily buy this.
No, it seems like I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say, hey, this is a rumor. There's absolutely no fact. The idea that that Apple may come out with some sort of a pro version of the iPad, I don't think that's too outlandish. I'm just not sure that the size makes a whole lot of difference. We've got the regular iPad, and then we've got the iPad mini. But then again, there are obviously people who would remind us that the idea of phablets, which are basically large phones but are somewhere between the size of a smartphone and a larger tablet, those have caught on. They're a great form factor with a lot of people. Not so much me, because it seems so in between, but I guess variety is the key. And Apple has so much competition now from other tablet makers and people that are eating into a market share that at one point was basically all Apple, that maybe they have to start thinking about just giving people variety.
Yeah, I still think even with the iPad, the current size of the iPad, I still think they do need a stand that is built into it, Sarah. Mm-hmm. I find myself so often where I do love watching video content on the iPad, but I want to set it down. And I have Griffin Loops and a bunch of different stands in the house, which sometimes I can and can find. Sometimes I can't find them. But it seems to me the iPad is kind of an awkward physical size if you don't have some way to stand it up. So I would like to see that more than I would like to see the iPad being just a few inches larger.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. By the way, somebody accused us recently of always agreeing with each other at the end of the show in Rad or Fad. And it's like, I want to remind him, Amber and I are not, it's not like an argumentative show. We both have the option to decide if we think something's rad or fad, but we just happen to, you know, have great minds that think alike a lot of the time. So that's just going to happen.
Not the anti-social hour. You can go listen to another show for that. But, you know, also, to be honest, Sarah, I mean, we have very similar backgrounds, right?
True. That's true.
We're around the same age. I think there are just things that we agree on. Even though we don't know each other really well, it seems like we are more alike than perhaps other people who host shows together. And I don't think that's a bad thing, especially as we're going to create something amazing together.
That's right. I think it's a good thing because it's fun. And that's the whole point of being social and talking about social networks. It's like, if you're not having fun, I mean, we're not doing this for our health. Yeah. Although I guess there is some health benefits to being social because it's, you know, it's a community. The iPad Pro, I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and say for the record, it's a fad, at least in the way that you described this as a larger iPad.
Yeah, and I think we should just mention a tweet we just got from at Mac Interactive, who says the bigger iPad would perhaps be the Apple TV. And I think I mentioned that as well, but just wanted to throw that in there. And then people would probably think that was kind of rad, but I'm going to say also it's a bit of a fad.
Yeah.
Although next time, Sarah, I'm going to find something that we don't agree on.
Ooh, all right. That's a good challenge. Or I'll just, you know, whatever you say, I'll be like, wrong. That's the worst idea ever.
Do you know there are people, and I'm sure our listeners have heard this before, but there are people who work on air, and I've been with people like this, who take a stance that's opposite of the person that they're with, even though they don't believe in it necessarily, but just to have that friction on TV. I can't tell you how many panels I've been on, even recently, where I'll say something and then someone else will say, okay, well, I'll take the opposite side. And that always seems to me to be such a terrible thing to do. I mean, if you're not authentic about that, I just, you know, what's the point, right?
Yeah.
But there's demand for that in TV. So.
You're right. And often somebody will, they'll get into it by saying, well, let me play devil's advocate for a second.
Yes.
And it's like, well, but do you want to? Is this actually something that you feel? Because, yeah, there is that drama. It's like we're all used to, oh, you get enough people together and two people are going to hate each other. And then, you know, they'll come out swinging. And that isn't, you know, not everything has to be a debate. And it irks me when I feel like something's being set up to have a couple of people argue on a topic that maybe they don't really have opposing views on.
In many ways, that's how the media is kind of set up, to always put one person against another person. Look at the climate debate. They've turned science into a debate as well. But right. We won't go into that. But nonetheless, you know where I'm heading.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we are heading to just over an hour on the Social Hour. So I guess this is a good time to wrap up the show. It was a wonderful show. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. A reminder to those of you who would like to participate in the show live. We are now live on Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Amber is usually comfortably in her Toronto studio, but you never know where she's going to be next. Amber, do you have a big week coming up?
I'm going to New Orleans for a day to speak at a conference, and then I will be back here again for the Social Hour, Sarah. So it's always nice for me when I don't have to do the Social Hour in an airport, in the backseat of a car, or who knows where. So it's nice to be in a place where it's kind of stable. So I'll see everyone here next week for sure.
I am looking forward to your stability as well. All right, everybody, thanks for being with us. We will see you back here next week. Until then, I will see you online. And I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Amber McArthur, and we'll see you soon.